Hello, you're listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind radio reading. Lowell Association for the Blind is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. It's your main source of accessible community news and information. We're located in Lowell, Massachusetts. We read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. Lowell Association for the Blind radio is brought to you by volunteers and staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. I'm Leslie. I'll be reading to you today from the Tewksbury Town Crier. Lowell Association for the Blind would like to thank the Nancy and Richard Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support. The lead story on the front page of our Town Crier today is saying, Select Board approves community host agreement for Hillman Energy Project. The article is by Heather M. Pink in Tewksbury. The Tewksbury School Board voted unanimously last week to approve a host community agreement, HCA, with Hillman Energy Center, clearing the way for the agreement to be submitted to the Massachusetts Energy Facilities Sharing Board as part of the town's official testimony. The meeting, which focused solely on the agreement, followed weeks of public concerns and a joint session with the Board of Health. Town Manager John Curran spent the discussion by summarizing feedback received from residents, noting that the town received a tremendous amount of public questions, enough to generate a 37-page question and answer document that has since been posted online. According to Curran, the most common concerns centered on potential impacts to property values, insurance coverage and compensation in the event of an incident, safety and health risks, and transparency in the approval process. While he acknowledged that not all provisions would satisfy every resident, he emphasized that those issues are addressed throughout the HCA, particularly with regard to health and safety protections. Curran then reviewed recent edits to the draft agreement, explaining that most changes were technical or organizational. Several provisions were moved to exhibits to centralize financial terms, including $1.35 million in building permit-related payments. Other updates clarified how funds would be administrated, including a $50,000 homeowner reimbursement fund, food pantry contributions paid directly to the pantry, and the removal of language that would have classified disputes over fund use as a material breach of the entire agreement. Additional provisions added since the last draft include requirements for physical and cybersecurity protections, as requested by Select Board member James Mackey. Commitments to use local vendors in addition to local labor were possible, where possible, and financial guarantees designed to protect the town if Hillman fails to meet its obligations. Some figures remain unfinished, pending the determination of the project's overall value, which Curran estimated at approximately $3.7 million, a total community benefits. Before the vote, Select Board members questioned Special Counsel Jeffrey Bernstein about the legal and financial applications of approving or not approving the agreement. Bernstein explained that the state approves the project, but the town does not approve the HCA. None of the agreement's financial benefits, safety enhancements, or homeowner protections would be enforceable by Tewksbury. He also clarified that rejecting the HCA would not stop the state approval process. Several members raised concerns about enforcement, future ownership changes, and emergency response planning. Bernstein and Curran stated that the agreement binds any future project owner, includes decommissioning guarantees, and relies heavily on national recognized MFPA 855 fire safety standards. Enforcement mechanisms would involve the EFSB, state agencies, dispute resolution procedures, and if necessary, legal action. Board members also noted that the town has already spent close to $400,000 on legal and consulting costs related to the project. Reimbursement of these costs, they said, depends on approval of the HCA. While acknowledging public frustration with the state-driven process, member Eric Ryder stressed that battery energy storage facilities are mandated by state energy policy and that local boards have limited authority over siting decisions. This board does not have the power to stop the process, Ryder said, adding that the HCA represents the town's best opportunity to secure safety requirements, financial protections, and community benefits. Member Mackey apologized for what residents perceived as a lack of transparency and pledged improved communication moving forward. We work for you. Please continue to stay engaged and hold us accountable. The board ultimately voted 5-0 to approve the host community agreement and authorize the town manager, with advice from special counsel, to make minor legal adjustments before submissions to the EFSB. We're also told on the front page another heading, School Committee Establishes Superintendent Search Timeline. The article is by Rosalind Impink in Tewksbury. The Tewksbury School Committee met on January 28th to review the updated superintendent search timeline and the stakeholder feedback gathered to inform the selection of a successor to Brenda Therio-Regan, who will retire at the end of this school year. Listening sessions were held with staff, unions, and non-union leaders, district administrators, municipal partners, and the public. A survey was also shared with families, staff, and local affiliate officials. Feedback was compiled and aligned to the superintendent rubric to provide objective data on stakeholder priorities, revealing similar priorities for development of a leadership profile that will guide the job posting. Additional input from the TTA was included for reference. Members emphasized the need for a superintendent who is current on state educational changes, forward-thinking about curriculum and assessment, and capable of guiding the district through evolving graduation requirements, MSCA shifts, and federal compliance responsibilities, as well as emerging educational research, broader national trends, and innovative practices. Members stressed that special education must remain a top priority, with continued follow-through and audit findings and development of effective solutions. The committee also noted the importance of addressing stagnant MCAS performance and building on prior conversations about improving student outcomes. Also highlighted was the superintendent's responsibility for budget, knowledge, fiscal responsibility, and the ability to navigate upcoming financial challenges, including grant losses, collaboration with municipal leaders, the transition to a new business manager, the ongoing facilities study, and a potential grade realignment. The committee felt the stakeholder must survey results captured most communications expectations, but noted the importance of strengthening school councils, increasing parent involvement, and maintaining strong collaboration with town government. Finally, Under professional culture, they stressed the need for a leader who promotes high expectations, continuous learning, and thoughtful incremental improvements rather than wholesale change. The committee underscored the importance of selecting a superintendent who understands the needs, history, and direction of this district. What's the uniqueness of Tewksbury, and what do we need from a district leader? Posed member Katie Anderson. Members stressed that the next superintendent must recognize the community's identity, priorities, and student needs, and be prepared to uphold high expectations rather than accept the status quo. They highlighted the value of strong leadership during collective bargaining, noting that upcoming negotiations will require collaboration to develop sustainable long-term agreements. In discussing the superintendent's relationship with the school committee, members reflected on the importance of open communication and shared goals, particularly around academic performance. They agreed that the superintendent must be willing to challenge the committee, staff, and community when necessary to drive improvement. The committee agreed that beginning the superintendent search with an internal-only posting is the most practical and fair approach, noting that comparing internal and external candidates simultaneously has proven difficult in the past. Members emphasized that internal searches can strengthen organizational continuity, build leadership capacity, and reward commitment within the district. If no strong internal candidates emerge, the committee would then expand the search externally without losing time. They also discussed how to involve the previously assembled working group made up of parents, staff, teachers, and community members in a more structured and meaningful way, such as through targeted small group conversations with candidates rather than traditional meet-and-greet sessions that historically drew low turnout. The superintendent interviews themselves would remain public and conducted solely by the school committee. The group then outlined a proposed timeline, posting the internal position by February 6th, keeping it open through February 20th, screening applications the week of February 23rd, and scheduling advisory group meetings in early March, followed by public interviews in mid-March of the process as the process moves forward. They also agreed on a proposed salary range of $195,000 to $205,000 for the posting. And I see here, as we've been enduring this very cold, snowy winter now, here's an article. It tells us, visit NASA to experience island life. This article is by Rosalind Impink. For tropical breezes and sparkling blue seas, NASA is a destination that exemplifies island life and provides visitors with a unique history and culture. NASA is the capital of the Bahamas, an independent country under the British Commonwealth. A collection of islands off the coast of Florida, the Bahamas was a major trading seaport and eventually became home to thousands of formerly enslaved slaves. Today, tourism and banking are the country's main industries. Native son Sidney Poitier, the first black actor and first Bahamian to win an Oscar, is highly revered in Nassau and has the city's largest bridge named after him. As a diplomat, he served as Bahamian ambassador to Japan and ambassador to UNESCO. Nassau is a colorful town to walk through, with small streets and brightly painted facades. That's by design. Color coding is used to identify various government buildings, legislature, and administration. buildings are bright mint green. Junkanoo, a centuries-old street festival, is a hallmark of Nassau's culture and takes place in late December. Participants wear elaborate, colorful costumes representing a variety of characters and parade through the streets, drumming and dancing. An important community tradition, the festival originated in the West Indies in defiance of slavery and a celebration of the resilience of the Bahamian people. One of the first historical landmarks you should be sure to visit is the Queen's Staircase, carved from solid limestone rock by slaves in the 1700s. The staircase cuts a path from Fort Fincastle down to the city and oceanfront. Later, they were named for Queen Victoria, who ruled Britain and the Commonwealth countries from 1837 to 1901. Surrounded by towering walls and shaded with tropical flora, the stairs are otherwise otherworldly and seemingly impossible, considering the effort it must have taken to carve them out of solid rock. Take the 65 steps to the top alongside the cascading waterfall and visit the straw market at the fort, where vendors sell handmade crafts and souvenirs. Nassau offers its own unique and delicious cuisine. This is not to be missed. The national dish of the Bahamas is conch, a large shelled sea small. Conch is reminiscent in texture to calamari, but is often cooked like clams, fried, frittered, or steamed in chowder. Peas and rice is another hearty Bahamian dish in which pigeon peas and long grain rice are cooked in a pork and tomato-based broth and heavily seasoned. Flavorful and inviting, the dish is frequently served alongside chicken or fish. For dessert, Nassau is famous for its rum cake, a moist, delicious, and often strong treat. The rum used to infuse these cakes is distilled locally. Popular flavors include pineapple, amaretto, and coconut. Factory offers the chance to sample the inventory. Nassau offers plenty of culinary and culture surprises to be discovered. This island paradise is a welcoming and historic gateway to the Bahamas. I see a notice here I think that would be relevant for all of us in the fact that Shriners Children's warns parents about pediatric burn risks at home and online. From Boston, each year more than 100,000 children in the United States are treated in emergency departments for burn injuries, with about 20,000 requiring hospitalization, according to the National Institutes of Health. With four specialized burn care locations throughout the United States that treat more than 3,000 burn patients each year, Shriners Children's doctors are urging parents to be aware of common burn risks found both at home and online. Most burn injuries, especially scald burns, can be prevented with simple safety measures, said Dr. Ludwig, a burn surgeon at Shriners Children's, who has spent more than 20 years treating pediatric burn patients. Young children are very curious, and accidents can happen quickly. For example, we often see kids reach for a pot of boiling water on the stove and spill it onto their head or upper body. That type of accident can cause significant burns and even require hospitalization, or eventually skin grafts or reconstructive surgery. Taking simple precautions, such as turning pot handles toward the back of the stove and creating no playing zones around any area where there is hot liquid or fire, can help prevent life-changing accident. Social media is also a major factor in encouraging dangerous challenges and trends that could result in burn injuries among children. One recent example is the viral fire challenge, where teens coat their hands in rubbing alcohol or hand sanitizer and set them on fire, causing severe burns and even disfiguration. Other challenges that have landed kids in the hospital with severe burns include the hot sugar challenge, the boiling water challenge, the bear crawl challenge. While many social media platforms set a minimum age of 13, Dr. Bransky said the children often don't fully understand the risks these challenges pose, even at that age. It's nearly impossible to keep kids off social media where these challenges are seen, but there are measures we can take to monitor what they are watching. Dr. Bransky explained, use parental controls on their devices, limit their time online, and talk to them frequently. Ask them what they are searching online and if they've seen any crazy challenges lately. If so, educate them on why it's not a good idea or why it's dangerous and what could happen if it goes wrong. Let them know that it's okay if they don't participate in any trend online. Shriners Children's, Boston, Northern California, Ohio, and Texas are accredited by the American Burn Association as verified pediatric burn centers. Shriners Children suggests parents do the following to help avoid burn accidents. Turn pot handles away in the kitchen. Remove having cords hanging down throughout your house. Don't let young children play in the kitchen while someone is cooking, and never leave them unattended by a stove that's hot. Do not hold a baby while draining any foods or drinking hot drinks. Check the temperature of bath water before putting a child into the bathtub. If your child receives a scald burn, remove the child from the hot liquid immediately. Remove any clothing at the site of injury. Cool the injury with cool tap water. Do not put ice on a burn. Seek medical attention and call 911 if necessary. Once the injury has been assessed in the emergency setting, seek care at a healthcare facility with pediatric burn care experience. And about Shriners Children's. Shriners Children's improves the lives of children by providing pediatric specialty care, including innovative research and offering outstanding education programs for medical professionals. Children with orthopedic conditions, burns, spinal cord injuries, and cleft lip and palate are eligible for care regardless of the family's ability to pay or insurance status, and receive all care and services in a compassionate, family-centered environment. Also, we're told Tewksbury's hosting Tree Talk to discuss tree cutting in Tewksbury. The Tewksbury Community Development Department and Department of Public Works are teaming up once again to educate tree removal contractors, residents, and other interested in the permitting requirements for tree removal in town. The Tree Talk will take place on Wednesday, February 18 at 2 p.m. at the Town Hall. The goal of this session is to provide education related to the regulation of public shade trees, rules for tree cutting overall, and how the Conservation Commission's jurisdiction affects tree cutting. The conservation agent, and tree warden will each make a brief presentation on their area of expertise and be available to answer questions. This meeting is open to the public, and registration is encouraged but not required. You may register by visiting www.tewksbury-ma.gov/treetalk. If you have any questions, reach out to the conservation agent Abigail Mahoney at amahoney@tewksbury.ma.gov. In the opinion section, we see here, in line to the editor, selective enforcement undermines the will of the people. In her article last week, Attorney General Andrea Campbell argues the every elected official has a responsibility to use the tools at their disposal to address the housing crisis. She frames her lawsuit against 9 Massachusetts towns as a necessary defense of the law and the democratic process. However, the Attorney General's commitment to enforcing the law appears to be selective, applying only to the policies she favors while ignoring those that demand accountability from her colleagues on Beacon Hill. The Attorney General's aggressive stance on the MBTA Communities Act stands in stark contrast to her response, or lack thereof, to the overwhelming passage of 2024's Ballot Question 1. Over 72% of Massachusetts voters sent a clear, undeniable mandate to the State House. They want State Auditor Diana DeSiglio to have the authority to audit the legislature. Despite this historic mandate, the Attorney General has not only declined to enforce this new law, but has actively stood in its way while she sues towns like Milton and Holden for failing to meet housing deadlines. She has simultaneously blocked the auditor's legal recourse. Her office has asserted that the auditor cannot pursue independent litigation to enforce the audit without her express permission, effectively granting the legislature a pocket veto over a law the people just passed. Prioritized political relationships over public transparency, while she cites her personal history and the stability of housing as a motivator for her current lawsuits, she ignores the instability caused by a legislature that remains one of the least transparent in the nation. If the law is truly mandatory and enforceable for small town zoning boards, why is it optional for the Speaker of the House and the Senate President? The Attorney General claims that each of us has a role to play. If that is true, her role should not be that of a selective gatekeeper who picks and chooses which voter approval mandates to defend. The true accountability means enforcing the law even when it is uncomfortable for the political establishment. If the Attorney General wants the people of Massachusetts to trust her, tools of enforcement, she should start by enforcing the audit that nearly 2.5 million of us voted for. Until then, her crusade for compliance will look less like a pursuit of justice and more like a pursuit of a specific political agenda. And also, here, Habitat for Humanity of Greater Lowell partners with Minuteman Tech to help build single-family homes. In Concord, Habitat for Humanity Lowell is building 3 single-family homes in Concord in partnership with the CHDC and CHA at 406 Old Marlborough Road. These homes will be sold at an affordable rate to qualifying families having below 80% AMI, and 2 out of 3 will be considered local preference. Habitat aims to furnish 2 of the homes in 2026 and the final home in early 2027. Through the typical Habitat model, volunteers will be building these houses to keep construction costs low. Savings are then passed on to the new homeowners to ensure the mortgage is kept affordable. All three foundations are complete, and framing has begun. Lowell Habitat is excited to share that house number 2 will be built in partnership with Minuteman Tech. Their students will be working on the house throughout the school year. It will be a 3-bedroom house, and they will be following Habitat's building plans that have been agreed upon with the town of Concord. The students are currently working on first floor wall framing with the end goal of having all their construction trades involved in the building process, electrical, plumbing, carpentry, etc. We appreciate Habitat for Humanity's partnership, which affords our students extensive opportunities, including real-world technical experience and community impact, said Minuteman Superintendent Harold Driscoll. This project is an excellent example of experts in industry coming together with vocational educators to truly prepare the Massachusetts workforce of the future. John Mastrolowski, Habitat Director and Construction Foreman, a carpenter instructor at Greater Lowell Tech School, has partnered with Greater Architects of Lowell to work the house designs into a volunteer-friendly curriculum. This will not only help HFHGL with this Concord project, but with future projects as well, ensuring volunteers walk away having learned something valuable, all while giving back to the community. It's great to see today's youth so involved and enthusiastic about construction, said John. This Concord project allows them to build at the highest standards, familiarizing themselves with the latest products and materials used in residential construction. Minuteman's partnership with Habitat for Humanity gives our students meaningful, real-world experience connected to their future careers, while also fostering a strong sense of civic responsibility that helps them grow into both skilled professionals and well-rounded, compassionate citizens, said Minuteman Principal Paul Delavera. To get involved or learn more about the project, please reach out to our Director of Development, Kate, at lowellhabitat.org. About Habitat for Humanity Greater Lowell. Habitat for Humanity of Greater Lowell brings people together to build homes, strengthen communities, and create opportunities, serving 16 towns across northern Middlesex County. Habitat builds and rehabilitates safe, affordable housing and provides critical home repairs to help low-income families. Seniors and veterans remain safe in their homes. Since 1991, Habitat Greater Lowell has helped more than 53 families achieve stability and self-reliance through home ownership. And this is of interest. Former BC quarterback reflects on football leadership and life without regrets in Tewksbury. Bayberry at Emerald Court, a Northbridge senior living community offering independent living, assisted living, and Avita memory care, shares the story of resident Frank Red Harris. A former high school and college quarterback at Malden Catholic and Boston College following Super Bowl 15. Long before packed stadiums and collegiate championships, Red's football journey began the same way many great stories do. Neighborhood games with friends at the streets of Malden between the ages of 10 and 12, games of tag rush, sparked a passion that would carry him from Pop Warner football to the quarterback position at Malden Catholic High School and eventually to Boston College, where he would start 3 seasons. I realized I was a good quarterback as we continued to win, Red shared. But more importantly, I learned what it meant to lead. At Boston College, Red's time as a starting quarterback proved to be formative, not only on the field, but off it. He credits those years with shaping his leadership philosophy, one rooted in trust, respect, and teamwork, rather than authority. Playing quarterback taught me that leadership isn't about dictating. He said it's about understanding your teammates, learning their trust, earning their trust, and recognizing that you're playing for more than just yourself. You're playing for your family and your community. Those lessons, Red said, have stayed with him long after the final whistle. The importance of being a good friend and teammate first has become a guiding principle throughout his life, influencing how he approaches relationships, challenges, and leadership beyond football. When asked what advice he would give to young quarterbacks or anyone chasing a dream, Red exemplifies the same values that defined his playing career: build trust, foster genuine connection, and lead with intention. Leadership is about recognizing what needs to be done and helping your team succeed together, he explained. Now, as a lifelong New England Patriots fan, Red still feels a familiar pull when watching the team compete on football's biggest stage, Super Bowl. The excitement brings back memories of meaningful end-of-season games and once played himself, and a sense of gratitude for the journey. When he asked if he would do anything differently, Red's answer was a simple and definitive, "Nope, no regrets." That statement, perhaps more than any statistic or accolade, captures the legacy of his football career, a life shaped by teamwork, purpose, and the rare ability to look back with contentment and pride. You have been listening to the Lowell Association for the Blind radio reading. Lowell Association for the Blind would like to thank UMass Lowell's WUML-FM for providing the radio signal that allows us to broadcast 5 days a week. Thank you for listening to Lowell Association for the Blind radio. Lowell Association for the Blind is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. There are many ways to listen to Lowell Association for the Blind radio. You may request a free specialized radio receiver. Or for more information about our radio receiving service, call Lowell Association for the Blind at 978-454-5704. You can listen to Lowell Association for the Blind radio anytime by dialing 1-631-359-9069. You may visit our website, where you can tune in to Lowell Association for the Blind at lowellassociationfortheblind.org. This has been Leslie. Thank you for listening, and enjoy your day.